KPTZ now joins the Board of County Commissioners' weekly meeting for this week's public health updates on COVID-19, live from the Jefferson County Courthouse. This is KPTZ, Fort Townsend.
Jefferson County Public Health Director Vicki Kirkpatrick today as well, and also the listeners of KPTZ. To all of you, welcome. And with that, we'll pass it off to Dr. Lowe.
Well, thank you. Good morning. So, I'll just start with, I'll deviate from my tradition, and I won't give you a bunch of numbers at the beginning, but just to summarize that nationally, the case counts for COVID-19, they continue to climb, and in about a third of the states, it's at an accelerating pace. So the reproduction number is greater than one, and really the epidemic is not in control in those states. Nonetheless, virtually all states in the U.S. are going through some degree of reopening at this point. Some are very close to being fully open. And including some states where things are not well controlled, despite the opening. This week, Arizona is kind of the poster child of how not to do things in terms of opening up restaurants and other activities while their case counts are still climbing dramatically. So they're seeing a real surge. Texas is really having problems as well. And then over the last 2 weeks, we have a very unexpected and very powerful additional factor, and that is the mass protests that we've seen in many cities, including Seattle, cities on the Olympic Peninsula here, and things, of course, driven not by public health issues, but by protests against police brutality and especially police actions directed against Black Americans. You know, this is extraordinary social movement, and for issues that I would certainly argue are long overdue and are in fact a public health issue, and we'll get into that at the next Board of Health meeting. But just looking at this from the very narrow lens of infection control, this is something that when you have tens of thousands of people gathering, where social distancing is not maintained, where there's confrontations with the police, many people are unmasked, one factor we're really concerned about is when the police have used tear gas and these other irritant forces. Among the things it causes people to do is cough. And one of the worst things you could imagine doing is nowadays in the midst of a pandemic is inducing large numbers of people to cough in a situation where a lot of people are unmasked. So we're thinking that all these different factors are highly likely to cause a surge in cases. It's just a question of degree, and it's a question as to how good we are at responding to that, picking up those cases early and reacting to them in a way to suppress the spread of the infection. That's the system we've tried to build, is one that can react to changes like this. And we have some early data, and we're not really going to know what the consequence of these mass gatherings are for about 2 weeks from the start. We're kind of getting close to that point, and one of the worrisome areas we're tracking is Los Angeles. They were one of the early areas to have large-scale demonstrations. They're seeing a surge in activity. They're also, as a number of cities in California, they're reopening in many ways. So it's going to be very difficult, maybe impossible, to separate out the effects of the protests and the effects of the reopening strategy. But the important take-home message for us in public health is we're very likely to see a surge in cases, and we have to be prepared for that. We are urging people who've attended gatherings, especially if they've gone to the urban jurisdictions, they need to monitor themselves very carefully for the 2 weeks following those demonstrations, monitor themselves for symptoms. And moreover, I would recommend that anyone who has been in those kind of exposure situations, and if they're responsible for caring for a high-risk individual, or if they are a healthcare worker or someone who might be in a situation that they could expose someone else, being tested about 1 to 2 weeks after their exposure, it is now something we have more and more evidence for. Because, you know, one of our challenges in controlling coronavirus is that we're now pretty certain that around half the people who have it are asymptomatic. And the number may be even higher than that. So we're trying to not only find kind of a needle in the haystack, but find some needles that are invisible in that haystack. So we're doing more and more testing of asymptomatic individuals, people prior to surgery, people, if you work in a nursing home, now you're being tested every 2 weeks, irrespective of exposure or history. And we're experimenting with a lot of different ways to find asymptomatic cases. So, for instance, the mayor of Seattle has recommended that everyone who participated in the demonstrations be tested in these next 2 weeks. And if we're successful in doing that, if we're successful in picking up these new cases and isolating those individuals and hopefully identifying as many of their contacts as we can, we can successfully suppress the infection. We can certainly identify contacts within households and occupational settings. One of the other challenges of a mass demonstration is it's virtually impossible to identify the contacts within the demonstration. It's essentially everyone is a contact in those situations. So, this is the kind of challenge both from reopening and from the sort of unexpected new dimension. It's we've been expected. This is what we have been building up our public health system and our healthcare system to deal with. With the healthcare system, we're always concerned about it being overwhelmed. That's why we took the extraordinary measures that were taken in March, the kind of the lockdown, as people have called it. And there's a new study out. It was just released today in Nature that estimated that lockdown, as severe as the economic cost was, prevented 60 million cases of COVID-19 in the United States. So we were right on the edge of this exponential growth phase in many areas, and that extreme measure prevented an extraordinary amount of cases. Internationally, it's hundreds of millions of cases that were prevented. But what people have to realize is we didn't stop the pandemic. We just bought ourselves some time. And we bought ourselves some time to re-engineer how we do things and better prepare to respond to cases and learn how to manage this. And The real test will come as we open up and we see if we have learned enough lessons. And probably the most important thing I can say about this is, for all the preparations that we have done in public health and the healthcare system, we are not the decisive factor in this. Our control of the pandemic is going to be sort of won or lost in the sum total of a number of personal behaviors each of us is responsible for. So the things that really matter, the physical distancing, the hand hygiene, the masking, the cough etiquette, staying home if you're sick, and nowadays getting tested for COVID-19 if you're sick, all of those things are personal behaviors. They're things that we can't really force people to do. People have to not only choose to do them, but have to do them very consistently. And those are the main determinants that will tell whether we'll be successful in managing where we are now in Jefferson County in phase two, and whether we'll be able to go past that point. So just make a few more remarks in terms of how we're doing about that statewide. Our cases have certainly dropped from their peak in Washington State, but they've kind of flattened out. They've been oscillating in this 200 to 400 cases a day, which is still too many. You know, we would like to be down under 100, preferably around 50 a day would be a really good control target in Washington State. Our goal, and the governor just announced this on Friday, we would like to get testing up to about 20,000 cases or tests done per day in Washington State. We now have the lab capacity to do that, where the actual number of tests being done is fluctuating in the 3,000 to 7,000 a day range, mostly around 4,000 a day. So we are a long ways from that that high level testing that we need to do to have things in really good control. Here in Jefferson County, we continue to do a lot of testing. The total number of tests done and returned is now just shy of 2,000 tests. And of those, we've holding now for the last week at 31 cases. So our percentage, which used to be around 5 to 6% positive, has now dropped to 1.6%. And 30 of our 31 cases are now listed as recovered, which is certainly good news. It means that everyone's out of the hospital, everyone's back to home. And we've had no deaths. And the one that's not recovered is our newest case, and there it's just a matter of timing. We have every reason to believe they will fully recover. I know today we're going to talk about phase three. As many know, one county has already moved into phase three. Jefferson County is eligible to do that within about a week, and there's a lot of data we need to get together. My plan is to have the health officer recommendation done this week, and so to go out with the Board of Health agenda packet goes out on Thursday of this week. So certainly by then, and we'll. At this point, I'm not seeing real obstacles to it. If we had a unmanageable surge of cases, that would certainly be an issue. But we don't see any signs of that happening at this point. And I might, before we go to questions, I do have my KPTZ questions here, the ones I haven't figured out a way to work in the presentation. One listener noted that there were some differences between the State Department of Health count and our local website count. And to that I would remark, our local website is the accurate count of cases and especially negative cases. And it's something we've been working on with the state, getting all of the negative test results into their system. The system is very good at counting positive cases, but it's much harder to accurately count the large volume of negative cases that are done. That data is put in by different labs. Sometimes the hospital has to put it in, and it's just not working as well. So the state data, unfortunately, is not accurate on the state website. We continue to work with them. We'll get it right eventually, but our data is correct. We very carefully update it every day. So if you want to look, if you want to know what the accurate Jefferson County data is, it's on our website. I was asked what metrics is public health using to determine if social distancing and face masks are not keeping the infection from spreading. And that's basically our testing data. That is the measure of whether this is working or not. If we are doing enough tests and those tests are coming back negative, that's what we want to see. That means we're suppressing the infection. Got some questions on masking. I have a press release kind of done up in a question and answer format that'll be going out today that will have more information about masking. Significantly today is the day that the governor's requirement regarding masking for employers and employees kicks into effect. And this is basically an occupational health directive. So this is a directive under labor and industry enforcement that says employers are responsible for making sure that all their employees wear masks while indoors, you know, unless they're in private rooms, and wear masks outdoors as well if they cannot maintain the 6 feet or greater distancing. And moreover, employers are responsible for providing those masks to employees. So this is actually one of the stronger masking directives in the U.S. at this point. It's one that it does come with a lot of teeth. Labor and industry can assess monetary penalties, other sanctions against businesses, and they've announced that they intend to enforce this aggressively. So if people generally, labor and industry is complaint driven. So if an employee feels that they are not being given masks, or a customer, if it's a business, feels that employees are not being masked, there's a complaint mechanism for it. In terms of customers, we're taking a different approach. We don't want to be the mask police and go around giving out fines and trying to coerce people into doing something that they shouldn't want to do without coercion. At least at this point, we're trying a program of maximum education, maximum persuasion, and to convince people that this this is a really long haul kind of thing. You know, this is not a week or a month. We are going to be in this for a year or longer. And we just have to to do things differently. And it takes time to learn new things. But I have to say, you know, as I spend time in grocery stores and out in public and Home Depot, places like that, it certainly seems that there are a lot of people who don't get it. who feel that that is somehow someone else's responsibility to keep them safe. You know, and you know that it's public health or healthcare or elected officials. And my response to that is, you know, all of those agencies and health professionals and elected officials, our role is necessary, but it's not sufficient. This is something where everyone has to step up to the challenge, because we're really talking about behavioral change. So right now, businesses need to focus on worker protection, because they're required by law to do that. But having their customers wear masks is part of worker protection, too. Every unmasked customer that comes into a business is potentially exposing the employees in that business to an undiagnosed case of COVID-19. And customers have a role to play, too. In addition to accepting the inconvenience of wearing a mask, customers have the choice. If they go into a business or a public setting and there's a bunch of unmasked people, they're free to leave, and they should leave, because they're at an increased risk in that setting. As hopefully we all know at this point, the mask protects other people from you more than it protects you from other people. So we really all have to be masked for it to work. This is a long-term proposition. It's going to take time for the behavioral change. We have to give ourselves that time. But this is going to be one of the key things that determines whether we successfully move from phase two to phase three is how good a job we do as a community at controlling spread. And it means all of us taking this seriously. This is a pandemic. This is not a new front in the culture war. We're dealing with a virus that does not care, that's not even capable of caring what your beliefs are. You are just, to the virus, you are just cellular machinery that it wants to hijack and replicate it. My strong urging to people is fight the culture war somewhere else. This is a communicable disease war, and we've got to be in it all together. There's no us and them here. It's all us. And if we don't accept that, we're just not going to be as successful at it as we could be, as we need to be. So I'll leave it at that. And if there are any other questions, I'd be glad to try to answer them.
Go ahead, David.
It seems the 3-week interval between phases, maybe we should discuss, we're planning on discussing that in various forms today. It seems that there were some assumptions made with that was based on the amount of time that it takes to get the virus and show the virus, incubate the virus, that sort of thing. I doubt that anybody presumed 100% compliance with what was suggested as phase two behaviors when we entered phase two. We have now, as you mentioned, with a number of different types of protests over the last few weeks, both people protesting the restrictions that have been placed on them, and people also outraged by other things. And we've had a lot of phase four behavior in the past few weeks, as I would call it, which just kind of shows my narrow focus on the pandemic. But we've had all this phase four behavior, and that really wasn't anticipated in phase two. We anticipated phase two behavior seeing if that was working before we moved to phase three. And instead, we've had much more phase four behavior than I would have anticipated. Will that affect your recommendations in this coming week to have enough time to see what the impact of that is?
Well, it is a factor, what happens. If as you say it, the phase four behavior triggers a massive surge in Seattle that starts to fill up the hospitals, then that's going to be really bad news. That's going to be that we're kind of back to the starting point. I don't think that's going to happen, mainly because we've gotten a lot better intervening at early stages in the infection. We've gotten better at detecting it and isolating and quarantining people. So I'm hopeful that that won't be the case. But it says that the amount of phase four behavior, or as some national media has portrayed it, is America just wants to be over the pandemic, wants to believe that it's yesterday's news, that we've conquered it, we've moved on, let's get back to our lives, and that's a form of denial. And as a physician, it does not surprise me a bit. Denial is the predominant way that people deal with health conditions. It's usually the very first thing people do when there's bad health news is just refuse to believe it. And it's only when you can't deny it any longer that people generally take action. So it's a normal human response, but it doesn't work in this case. So we really have to get people past that. And it's to your question of this 3 weeks as kind of the minimum interval, what that was based on is two factors. One was the maximum incubation time of COVID-19 is 14 days. And it's also the time that when someone acquires a case, after 14 days, they are usually over it, or they're so sick they need to be hospitalized. So we generally know about the cases one way or the other. People got sick and then they've are largely recovered, or they're suffering one of the complications. About 10% of the diagnosed cases currently are ending up being hospitalized. And so there's this 2 week time to evaluate things, and then there's about a week to compile the data. That was the thought behind it. In reality, we would probably need much longer periods of time to evaluate the data, because it's not as if something dramatic happens on the very first day you go into phase two. It's the risk occurs on every day, and so I think there's an arbitrariness to the 3 weeks. Nonetheless, I think there's a compelling kind of economic and social argument that we need to try to get our society and our communities and our businesses to a stable point, to a phase where businesses can survive, people can, the essential activities of community can go on, but we do it in a new sort of smart and re-engineered way that allows us to suppress the pandemic virus until we can develop a vaccine or some antiviral medication, until we have better tools. At this point, I'm reasonably convinced that that phase three, what we're calling phase three, is a lot more sustainable level than phase two. And I think most of my colleagues in public health, and myself included, believe that we are not going to get to phase four until we have a vaccine. As we are never going to get back to the way things were before this pandemic until the pandemic is really over and people are no longer at risk of getting the infection. So phase three, when we get to that point, is where we're going to find ourselves staying, I think.
Dr. Locke, I have one question. You talked about the state having 20,000 testing tests per day capacity right now, and they're only doing 4,000 tests or so. And I'm wondering, is it time to start at least locally testing asymptomatic people by, I don't know, starting with the restaurant sector or something? And I just, you know, of course, we read about different approaches all over the place and reading about Iceland this weekend. You know, they did a lot of asymptomatic testing early on and really it sounds like a very effective contact tracing, effort behind it. I'm wondering if we're about to that point.
Well, we are. We're trying to figure out how to do it the smartest way we can. And testing has been going up and up. I think there was a day last week where there were like over 60 tests done in a day. All of them came back negative. I think there was one day when 160 some came in, and that was because everyone in the nursing home was tested that day. And so we'll be seeing more and more things like that. That testing is not cheap. You know, we don't want to waste the resource. We want to do it in the most targeted way we can. There's several big state projects that are underway to try to find out how best to focus testing. And we'll learn from those. But right now, we're doing more and more asymptomatic testing, and we're also we're encouraging anybody who's ill, we want tested.
Go ahead, Kate.
Thanks, Dr. Locke. Couple of questions. I don't know if you were listening before you hopped on at 9:45, but I've been getting a lot of feedback over the weekend from stores who have reopened, feeling unsupported in kind of the information that they have available to their customers, and being frustrated that there's not consistent signage. They feel it would be really helpful if there was consistent signage that specifically said we are under a masking order, kind of giving, shifting the responsibility from frustrated customers onto the store owner, and instead to say, no, this is what we are doing, what has been declared as necessary for public health. Is that, do you see an opportunity to be able to provide that kind of signage, and this is for you too, Vicky, but you know, stores understand that they can go on online and find signs and print those off, but they're asking specifically for a consistent message that points out that this is a county directive. And do you think that's a realistic goal? And, you know, frankly, I'm worried that we're talking about phase three when we haven't been able to kind of do the outreach and education I think is necessary for phase two.
Well, I can maybe start with that, because at our management team this morning, we talked about that very thing, about the potential for providing signage. The Jeffco Cares chamber-sponsored program has signage that, but they're providing that primarily to those businesses that have taken the pledge, if you will. So we talked about specifically creating downloadable, as well as having, you know, some printed of basic signs that say something to the effect of masks required per Jefferson County Health Officer Directive number, and I think it's 2020-2, and then actually put in smaller print at the bottom the actual verbiage of that directive. We would have some printed that businesses that didn't have the capability of downloading and printing their own, we would make those then available to the businesses. We didn't do that sooner, recognizing that there certainly are some concerns, but I know, and Dr. Locke can speak to this, there was some discussion earlier about whether or not that the recommendation or the directive needed to be tweaked in some cases, but that's not the case, and so we're going to be moving forward with doing that and getting those out there. And so we do want to make sure that the businesses are available, focusing primarily on those public-facing businesses, because not every business necessarily has a lot of public ingress and egress, but this is an opportunity to get that consistent messaging, and then for those who actually want to read it, actually having the language of the directive as well for the businesses to put up in their stores.
And I'm glad to hear, Dr. Locke, that you're going to be doing kind of an FAQ, because I think also condensing that into something that's more easily understandable will also serve in that function. And something I'll bring up perhaps later in our finance meeting is if indeed public health is going to be distributing these, I would love for us to also be providing masks for businesses who aren't getting them. And I realize there's, you know, might be some overlap with JeffCo Cares, but I don't care if there's overlap. Like, I feel like we just need to be getting this stuff out.
Masks to people, to customers, or to staff?
For businesses to have masks on hand to give to customers who don't have one. And again, this is something businesses are asking specifically for. One quick question, Dr. Locke. Have you given any thought to the playgrounds and ball courts issue? Our Parks and Rec department would appreciate any further guidance on if it feels safe at this time to reopen those.
Well, you know, it really comes down to these state directives. I mean, our position on that is, you know, anything that lies within the state directives is certainly permitted, and you know, and we certainly think is as safe as we can make it right now. And I think those guidance documents are out now that address most of those recreational kind of activities. They're never going to cover 100% of everything, but you know, people just need to look at things that are close. We're still getting a lot of questions from people who sort of believe that we are either the enforcer or the arbiter of these state guidelines, that you know, we should somehow modify the state guidelines to fit their particular situation. And that's not even an authority we have. This is all being done under the governor's directive, and so, you know, any questions we have about them, we have to direct to the governor's office and get clarification. So I urge, as the first step, people should really be familiar with that web page that's maintained by Governor Inslee's office that has this list of guidance documents that grows every day, and they're very likely to find their particular activity on it. If they don't, you know, there's people that can help them with that, either through emergency management or the health department or maybe other county departments. So we want people to look to those resources first, because they're, you know, fundamentally they're not rules that we created. we're not the ones who best understand.
And if I could just add, along those lines, Dr. Locke is correct. We're not necessarily the resident experts on all different types of businesses. And I think there is also a portal on each of those guidances that directs people, businesses, if they have questions about their business, they can directly contact the state through this portal and ask those specific questions and get a more defining answer to those questions than what we necessarily would be able to give. And some of those questions have resulted in some of the, as you'll probably noted, some of the memos that the governor has sent out subsequent to the guidance with clarifications and making clarifications. And so the more that the businesses can tap into that portal, the more likely we will see more clarification coming from the state as those questions sort of gravitate around specific issues that aren't clear.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I've been following the guidance pretty closely and haven't seen anything on playgrounds and ball courts, even in the new recreation guidance. Thank you.
All right, any last questions before we start discussing the timeline for phase three? All right, is Vicki or Mr. Morley going to tee off this conversational?
Vicki, you want to take a crack at that?
Well, we technically become eligible to apply for phase three on June 13th. The Board of Health will be meeting at their regular meeting on June 18th to consider Dr. Locke's recommendations. And right now, one of the things that we've talked about, although not necessarily finalized at this point, is the idea of perhaps trying to synchronize Jefferson County's move to phase three with both Kitsap and Clallam's move to phase three. So I've not been able to connect yet with Clallam, but Kitsap is basically on pretty much the same timeline that we are in terms of their plan, to my knowledge. Of course, that is always subject to change. But if we were to follow the Board of Health taking a position or making a recommendation on their regular Board of Health meeting on June 18th, and assuming that that recommendation was to move forward to phase three, then the Board of County Commissioners could either set up a meeting immediately following, like on the Friday after the 19th, or their meeting on Monday, regular meeting on Monday, to determine yay or nay to the recommendation made by the Board of Health, in which case then the Board of County Commissioners can submit that application to the Secretary of Health, the State Department of Health. And while we had less than a 24-hour turnaround going from phase one to phase two, given the governor's new Safe Start Washington and all of the counties being able to move forward in some way to phases, the turnaround time may take a couple of days. But the Department of Health has indicated that they will do everything they can to turn those applications around quickly. As Dr. Locke mentioned, between now and the Board of Health meeting, we, together with the healthcare system, have a lot of data and a lot of information that needs to be collected and synthesized and included in that application. It's a larger process than it was going to phase two. So that's something that we will be working on this week and, you know, all week, specifically to get that information available. And so we're beginning the process of gathering the data, et cetera. It's, you know, if the desire is to synchronize with Kitsap and CLOW, I'm assuming that they also intend to move forward. And like I said, I did talk with Kitsap. Then that's something we also would have to coordinate and put into place in terms of meetings.
And Kitsap and CLOW County are both eligible on the 18th, is that right, to move to phase three?
Yes, and my understanding is that Kitsap is planning to take it before the Board of Health on the 18th at a special meeting, and that the Board of County Commissioners is planning to meet then on Friday the 19th.
Okay, so we could do a special meeting on Friday, or we could even do a special meeting on Thursday after the Board of Health meeting if we so chose, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, go ahead, Bill.
So a couple of things. One, I think it's probably useful in this discussion to just remind ourselves of what are some of the things that are in phase three. And so that includes outdoor group recreation of 50 or fewer people. So a substantial increase in the number of people that can gather. Gatherings also no more than 50 people. Travel goes to resuming non-essential travel. Restaurants and taverns could be operating at less than 75% capacity and table size no larger than 10. So that's a substantial increase over the level of activities that are allowed under phase two. Bars could open at less than 25% capacity. Theaters can open at less than 50% capacity. And most likely, currently in both Clallam and Jefferson County, camping is restricted. That would likely open under phase three. So those are some of the increase in activity, which, as Dr. Locke has pointed out, comes with it, with an increase in the potential of exposure and transmission, hence the importance of things like masking and distancing. And so as you faced with phase two, commissioners, you're doing a balancing act between public health and what's safe to do and economic opportunity for businesses and for the community that is struggling. And so, you know, we want to recognize that that's the balancing that you're doing. And and what we're talking about here is Jefferson becomes technically eligible potentially on the 13th. Clallam and Kitsap become eligible potentially on the 18th. That's just a 5-day difference. And so what's the benefit of potentially synchronizing so that one county doesn't potentially become more of a target for a lot of folks visiting to take advantage of the broader opening of economic activity and recreational activity? So that's the trade-off that you are doing, and it's a serious one to consider. Also, as Vicki mentioned, we haven't yet had detailed conversations with Clallam County on what their timing and approach is. Their regular Board of Health meeting, our understanding is on the 16th, and so at least they're in discussion with Rich Sill. There's a possibility that even later that same day, their Board of County Commissioners might be able to meet and take action. And so it's possible that they would be submitting even before the 18th, and therefore the state would be in a position to give approval even with a few day turnaround on the 18th or shortly thereafter. So there may still be a timing. If you do wish to synchronize, there may still be some discrepancy in the timing between Clallam and Kitsap that we need to take a look at. So two things. Number one, do you want to try to synchronize? And then number two, what's involved to synchronize? We'll need to do more research about what the process is for each of our two respective neighbor counties.
Couple of points. Just want to acknowledge that, of course, the Board of Health will be deliberating on this as well. We're not the only decision makers here. Was there any resolution regarding Dr. Unthink's reconsideration of camping in Clallam? Want to think about that timeline as well here.
I talked to her about that on Friday, specifically asked her, and she said the Board of Health was actually rethinking that as not so much statewide opening of camping as I-5 corridor counties. Which is interesting because that just happened this weekend. So Snohomish, Pierce, and King County, they're actually calling it phase 1.5 in King County because it's not full phase 2. But it does include camping. I checked on that. Camping is opening in King County. So essentially over this weekend, those I-5 counties have opened up. There's still a lot of outbreak activity going on in Yakima County. It doesn't look like they're going to be opening anytime soon. But I think that was Clallam County's idea, is to de-link from that. What I didn't clarify with Dr. Unthank, and I can find this out from her, is whether they were going to wait till their next Board of Health meeting, which is a week from tomorrow, or whether they were going to do something right away. Because they're just as in Jefferson County, there are a lot of people eager to start the camping season in Clallam County. So they're hearing from people on this. But I'll find out. I have two regularly scheduled calls with the health officers of Clallam and Jefferson County. Clallam and Kitsap. We have scheduled calls on Tuesday and Friday every week just to try to keep our efforts synchronized. But I'll get in touch with her today and see if what the timeline of their decision with respect to camping is. Because the way I would read it, as soon as Clallam opens to camping, Jefferson County would automatically do it. It doesn't require an extra action of the Board of Health.
Okay.
Great.
Yeah. Please let us know when you know.
This is KPTZ. This is Don Trethewey. We've just heard the weekly public health updates on COVID-19 live from the Jefferson County Board of County Commissioners meeting at the courthouse. Thanks for listening.